Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
The tips, tools, support, and inspiration you need on your wellness journey. Rewired Radio with Erica Spiegelman.
Today we're going to be talking about what it takes to beat the odds with alcohol and drugs for adolescents and young adults. We have on Dr. Emily McSpadden, whose current research is exploring what helps at-risk youth. Emily is a psychologist and focuses on, you know, studies that really, you know, target disadvantaged populations. And today we're going to be talking about her research. Dr. Emily McSpadden, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, so I'm so excited to talk to people that are doing research on, you know, our adolescents and emerging adults. Can you tell us a little bit how you got into this and where the research is being done?
Absolutely. Well, for starters, I'm based in New York, and I originally was doing work with adolescents, young adolescents myself, in the school systems in Texas. It wasn't until I moved up to New York and started my my doctoral program when I started to really explore some of these things scientifically, but I was inspired to do that because of my one-on-one contact with a lot of students myself and seeing some of their struggles and some of the different issues that they face sort of got me started on this scientific journey and trying to assist them.
What is your personal connection to adolescence, and why do you want to help people that are young adults that are coming of age to kind of beat the odds?
Well, for starters, it seems like a really difficult task, not just for parents, but teachers and administrators to reach out to this particular population. You often see a lot of initiatives out there. You hear about it on the news or on TV where they're helping kids. And you see a lot of information about children's programs and that sort of thing. But in terms of adolescents and even young adults, there's a lot less out there being done, unfortunately, because people think, well, it's a lot harder to help them. And some of that is true, but it's also important to remember that they're at a very pivotal time in their life. And one of the reasons that I love so much to do this research is because this is a time when adolescents, young adults, they're coming into themselves. They're starting to make choices they never had the freedom to make before. And this is a very important time to help them.
Right. And when you say particular population, just so our audience understands, what disadvantaged populations are you really talking about? Inner city, or where is your research done?
Well, that's a great question. That can actually be answered in several ways, but I like to keep it in a way that makes the most sense for the most people. So we tend to look in developmental research, you tend to look at things in terms of risk factors and protective factors. I also call them vulnerability factors and protective factors.
Because we've all heard of at-risk youth, but we don't know what that means sometimes. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's an important thing to know about since you hear about it so much.
Right.
So we think about a kid who's coming into their puberty years. If they happen to have a lot of risk factors in their lives, then that would consider them at risk. It just so happens that we often hear about it as being, you know, people in low socioeconomic status, people who are of minority descent, people who have bad neighborhoods and, you know, are in inner cities. Those things amassed together have a lot of different risk factors included in their life experience. And that's why you tend to think of those youth as at risk. But really, an at-risk youth is anybody who has risk factors in their lives.
Right, yeah. And there's so many kids out there that are growing up with trauma of some kind, whether it's violence or emotional trauma or having something that has happened to them in their youth, they're being bullied or whatever it is. And then they turn to, you know, basically Band-Aid that pain with, sometimes we're seeing, drugs and alcohol, violent behavior. So how is that really what the research is based around, the behaviors that come from the traumas or come from the...
Absolutely. Right. So one of the things that we consider in this kind of research is, okay, so if there are a lot of different things in an adolescent's experience that would be qualified as risk factors, then then we have to consider that there need to be protective factors available too. So for instance, in the case of drugs and alcohol, if a kid is in a bad situation where risk factors are present, it is more likely that drugs and alcohol will be present and that they will avail themselves of using them. And that could happen to any kid. You could come from the best family in the world with tons of money, and that could still be the case for a person. So we do look at not just the risk factors around a child and an adolescent, but also the protective factors. So what might be there that that might be helping a kid in spite of risk factors being around them to defy the odds? And that's why my focus is on resilience, which is a concept that includes being exposed to big-time stressors and risks, but also showing that you're competent and successful even though those things are around you.
Right. And I so it's wonderful what you're doing and to help us understand this better. I also, you know, work in my own practice with a lot of, you know, kind of young adults. And I just see that there was so many ways now that we could use prevention, preventative measures to make sure that they have, you know, education, that, you know, there's a school called Mindfulness Schools out there. They're wonderful. They're teaching mindfulness in the schools before they become young adults. So it does your research take into account some options, like some, is there any way that we could tell people out there some ways that we could, if we see behaviors that are looking like they're a little dangerous or a little, you know, red flags are coming up with their kids, what they could do, how that they could prevent, you know, these behaviors from getting worse?
Actually, yes. And I think the key to understanding the ways that we can best help students, especially at-risk youth that are already showing some signs of danger, is realizing that we do actually know what some of the protective factors are that are best suited to help. For example, research across the board, including my research, has shown that relationships with a very caring, trustworthy adult is one of the most important things that you can hope to include into a child's life. So,
like a mentor even.
Like a mentor. It needn't be somebody who's in one family. Oftentimes, the relationship with the family can be difficult. So as long as there's, and it is important that this person happens to be an adult, because for an adolescent, it's, I mean, it's one thing for them to have lots of friends, but that's not the same thing as having an adult.
Understandable. So that would be one thing. So the Boys and Girls Club, that's why that they've been so successful probably. And there's so many amazing programs out there where kids can have some guidance and someone to look up to. A sounding board.
Absolutely. But the other thing that you mentioned earlier about mindfulness training, training has to do with another major protective factor, which is learning how to use self-regulation skills. So the thing about resilience is that it's not some sort of magic thing that some people are born with and some people aren't. You can actually learn resilience, and that's what a lot of people are starting to understand in the science. We used to think it was just part of people's personality, but actually you can learn it, and you can learn effective skills of self-regulating your behaviors and choices, and that's something that can come from things like mindfulness training, absolutely.
And other grounding techniques. Can you give us one or two that stand out in your head for people out there that were are curious?
For techniques on how to help students how to build
resiliency, like meditation, or is it exercise? Is there any?
Absolutely. So mindfulness also includes things like reflection. Meditation is a big one. So teaching students how to meditate is one of the things that I do, and they find it very powerful and effective. Also, finding a way to connect with an adult or somebody who has sort of been there, done that, that you trust is a very, very powerful thing to do.
Yeah, that's, I'm so, so grateful for you to share this with us today. And thank you for your research and all this, you know, innovative things out there that are really trying to help the are at with at risk youth. You could find Emily's book, Five Ways of Doing Qualitative Analysis, on Amazon. And Emily, thank you so much for being on with us and talking about this.